Alright, so we are holding Mem Gimel Amud Beis at the beginning of the Gemara, second line from the bottom. We had a very long Mishnah yesterday. Moshe, you want to move over a bit because we're not that kind of thing. We had a very long Mishnah yesterday that described what the Kohen Gadol does with he shechts his par, after doing vidui on it two times, he shechts it. It's going to be a while before he's going to sprinkle the blood, so he gives it to somebody to stir it. And then he goes and takes coals that he's going to bring into the Kodesh HaKadoshim to burn the Ketores. And then we discussed a number of differences between the way things were done on Yom Kippur versus the way they were done the rest of the year. The shovel, we said, was a different size. It was made out of a different material. It was lighter, et cetera, et cetera. So now, what we said in the Mishnah, the first thing we said was that after he shechts his par, he gives the blood to somebody, he gives the basin of blood to somebody who's going to be standing. The expression in the Mishnah was, al ha-roivet ha-revii shebehechol, on the fourth row of tiles, of stone tiles, in the hechol, and that person would be stirring it. So the question is, what do you mean in the heichal? The Gemara says, v'hoksiv. The Pasuk says, v'chol adam lo yir ba'oil moyed. Because nobody should be in the oil moyed, meaning in the heichal building, while the Kohen Gadol is doing the avodah. And we're going to explain, as we go through the Gemara, that the avodah we're talking about is while he's doing the ketores, among others, and we're saying that nobody's allowed to be in the heichal at that time. So how do you have this guy standing over there, stirring the blood inside the heichal? So the answer is, Amar Rav Yehuda Tani Shal Heichel. You're right. The Mishnah doesn't mean Sheb Baheichel, the fourth row in the Heichel. It means Shel Heichel. It means the fourth row from the Heichel outward. So there you count the rows of stones from the Heichel, and you get to the fourth one, and that's where the guy would stand. And we talked about yesterday various possibilities why Dafka the fourth one, but whatever the case, that's what it was. We're going to learn in the Gemara later. Now, we have to remember, the layout of the Beis Mikdash, there's the Kodesh HaKadoshim, then outside of that is the Kodesh, also known as the Heichel, and then outside of that you have an entryway called the Ulam. Then outside of that, all of that is within the building, then you have outside of that is the Azorah, which is open, which is unroofed, which is open to the air. We're going to discuss in the Gemara later whether the Ulam is considered to be part of the Heichel or not. If it's considered to be part of the Heichel, conceivably, if it's considered to be part of the Heichel, then we count four rows of tiles from the outside of that. If rather we say that the Ulam is considered to be a different level of Kedusha than the Heichel, then conceivably the fourth row could be within the Ulam itself. We'll touch on that point in the Gemara. Okay. So now let's discuss this detail that we said that nobody's allowed to be in the oil moy. So the Gemara says, Tanan Abanan, we learn in a Braisa. The Pasuk says, V'chol Adam lo yiyah ba'oil moy. Nobody should be in the oil moy. So what does that mean? Yochol afilu ba'azara. Now, maybe it means not only in, and now there's a different gears over here that takes out the word oil moy, but whatever the case, it says no person should be there while the Kohen Gadol is doing the avodah. Yochol afilu ba'azara. So if you only had the words v'chol adam lo yiyah, you'd think that maybe nobody is even allowed to be in the azara, in the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash, while he's doing this. Therefore, the Pasuk says only in oil moy. So nobody's allowed to be inside the building. Aimly ella oil moyed to the midbar. Fine. So that tells us only the oil moyed that was in the midbar. So the pasuk is describing over here the avodah that took place in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, in the Mishkan on Yom Kippur during the years in the desert. Hashem is telling Moshe to tell Aaron the instructions, what to do, what not to do. So maybe at that time then you're not allowed to be inside while the Kohen Gadol was doing his thing. Where do we know that the same thing applies? Where do we know the same thing applies to the Mishkan in Shiloh and the Beis Olamim, the Beis Mikdash, which is called Beis Olamim because the Kedusha of it lasts forever, unlike the Mishkan in each of its various places where the Kedusha went away afterwards. So Talmud Lomar Bakodesh. Therefore, the pasuk says Bevoy Lachaper Bakodesh when the Kohen Gadol comes in to accomplish kafara in the Kodesh. So in the Kodesh means any area that's holy that has the kedusha of the Kodesh Hakadoshim and the Kodesh and so forth. Then the same rules apply. Tosfos and Tosfos Yeshanim discuss over here in some detail why we need that. Generally speaking, when we have a pasuk that tells us something in the Mishkan, then it applies equally well. It applies equally well into this mikdash, and they discuss different reasons why you might have thought in this case that maybe it includes only the Mishkan and the Midbar. Anyway, it says Bakodesh, so it includes all of them. Next, Eimli Ela B'Shas Haktara. Now, you would know also that this only applies while the Kohen Gadol was offering Ketores, which we're going to finish quoting the Braisa first, then we're going to start analyzing it, and we're going to see what would make us say that this Pasuk, B'voya L'chapa B'Kodesh Ad Seisoi, is talking about when he's doing the Ketores. After all, it comes in continuation with Psukim that talk about what he does with the blood. So how do we know it also means Ketores? We'll get to that soon. Continues the Braisa B'Shas Matan Domin Minayin. How do we know that the same din applies while the Kohen is applying the blood, while he's doing the sprinklings of the blood? Minayin, where do we know? Tamad Lama B'Voye L'Chaper. Therefore, the Pasuk says, when he comes in to accomplish Kapara. Then, Ein Li Ela B'Knisosei. Then, if you only had thus far in the Pasuk, then you would know only that when he goes in, then nobody's allowed to be in the Heichel. Bitsiose Minayin. How do we know that nobody's allowed to be there when he's leaving either, until he actually leaves? Tamad Lama, I'd say so. Therefore, the Pasuk continues until he leaves. Okay. Then when the Pasuk finishes off, the Chippur Bado V'ad Beser V'ad Kol Kahal Yisrael, when it continues that he should accomplish Kapara for himself and his family, which we said Beser means primarily his wife, and for the entire Kahal Yisrael, for the entire congregation of the Jewish people, that means, and Beser, we said, also means his fellow Kohenim, so it means Kaparose Kademes Kaparas Beser, means his Kapara is accomplished before the Kapara of his household. Hagodas Agurah takes that out, actually, because when you think about it, the kapara for himself and his household, his family, is the same exact vidui. This is the first vidui on the par, he says, for myself and my family. So why are we listing them separately over here? Okay, anyway, kaparas basic kademas, the kapara of his family, of himself and his family, takes place before the kapara of his fellow kohenim, because we said the first vidui is for himself and his family, and the second vidui is for the other kohenim. The kaparas echav kohenim kademas, the kaparas kokal Yisrael, and the kapara of his fellow kohenim comes before the kapara of the rest of the Jewish people, namely that he does the vidui for the kohenim before he does the vidui for the rest of the Jewish people. Actually, Tosfos Yeshanim discusses possibilities over here that are we talking about the viduyim? Or maybe more generally, we're talking about, he brings from the Rashbam, that we have, the Mishnah in Hodias tells us a scale of importance. That you have a Kohen comes before Levi, a Levi comes before Yisrael, and one nafkamina of it might be that if you have a Kohen's Korban and a Levi's Korban, for example, then the Kohen's comes first. So it might be that the Gemara is referring to that point also, and in that case, in other words, not directly relevant to the Korbanos of Yom Kippur. It's a statement that we would apply to other Korbanos throughout the year. Okay. Now, thus far, now let's analyze it.
Alexander.
We said if it only said b'chol adam lo yia ba'oyomoy b'voyoy, then you would only know that applies when he's bringing the Ketores. So my mashma, where do we see anything in the pasuk about Ketores, especially again because the pasukim before it are talking about the applications of blood, the sprinklings of blood of the pyre and the sire. So Omar Rava, v'chein Omar Rav Yitzchok Rav Dimi, v'chein Omar Rav Elazar, Omar Kra, because let's look at what kind of kapara the pasuk is talking about. The chipper badoi over ad besoi over ad kokahal Yisrael. The pasuk says that he accomplishes kapara, he accomplishes atonement for himself and for his family and for the whole Jewish people. So, in other words, we're talking about one kapara that covers all of them. A zehu kapara sheshava loyul beisir la'echav akoyim ulchol kahal Yisrael. What kind of kapara that he accomplishes on this day covers all of them at the same time? Heveim is uaktoras aktoras. Necessarily, you must say that is the bringing of toras, because Rashi explains. Because after all, when it comes to the blood, the different korbanos are mechaper for different groups. The par is mechaper for the koyim. The same kapara, the kapara that's accomplished by the pyre for the Kohenim is accomplished by the Sor Lashem for the Jewish people, for the rest of the Jewish people. So you can't say that there's one kapara that covers all of them. Both of them, by the way, again, we talked about, I mentioned this briefly the other day, the Mishnah and the Gemara and Shavuos talk about that we're not necessarily talking about these covering all of their Avedas. Primarily, it's covering certain cases of Tumas Mikdash Rekodshav, where a person was Tomei and entered the Bis Mikdash, or was Tomei and ate Kodshim, and in certain cases where he himself is not bringing a korban over the yodid, because he didn't know to begin with that he was Tomei, whatever the scenario is exactly. So then you have the Par and the Sori, respectively, Yom HaChapa for that. Later on, you have the Sori La'azazel, which covers all the rest of the Averis. Anyway, the point is, so what kapara is the Kohen Gadol accomplishing that covers all of them? It's not any of the three viduyim, because those are separate. It's not the sprinkling of the par and the sur, because those are also separate for the Kohen and versus the Yisraelim. So necessarily, it must be the Keturis, which covers everybody together. So the question is, a Keturis Mechaperis? You're telling me that Keturis is something that accomplishes kapara. Where do you find that? And the answer is, ain't. Yes, as a matter of fact. We find in a pasuk, we find in Parshas Korach, that Keturis accomplishes kapara. The pasuk says over there that there was a plague that broke out. The people had complained after Mamita Mas'am Hashem, after the whole affair of Korach and Dosan and Aviram, that people were swallowed up into the ground and burnt and whatever. People are complaining to Moshe and Aaron, you caused Jews to die unnecessarily. Some of them are maybe still thinking that it doesn't necessarily prove that the kahuna belongs specifically to Aaron. So a plague broke out, and the pasuk says that Aaron went. And Moshe tells Aaron to take Keturis, by eating a Keturis, by Chapra La'om. He put the Keturis on the fire and accomplished Kapara for the people. So we see that Keturis does accomplish Kapara. The Tanid Dvei Rabbi Shmuel. And we learn in a Braisa from the Yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel. Al Mak Keturis Mechaperis. What specific Avera is Keturis Mechaper for? Al Lashon Hara. Specifically for Lashon Hara, which is what was going on over here. Because they're saying Lashon Hara on Moshe and Aaron, you caused Jews to die unnecessarily. Why is Keturis associated with Lashon Hara? Yavoi Dover Sheba Chashai V'Yichapra Amaisa Chashai. Let something which is brought Bachashai in secret or in quietness, let that come and be Mechapra for Lashon Hara, which is also said in secrecy. And in what sense is Keturis in secrecy? So Tosfos Yeshanim talks about a couple of possibilities. One of them is it's done in silence. Now the Matan Domim, the sprinkling of the blood, is actually he said something, as we're going to learn in the next parak. Achas, achas, va'achas. He has to keep count of the number of sprinklings. So he's saying something as he's doing it. Whereas the Keturis, he just offers very silently. It's also that. So that's another explanation. Also, is we're talking over here about the fact nobody can be in the Kodesh HaKadoshim and nobody can be, in fact, in the whole Heichel while he's doing it. So that also represents that it's a Dover Sheba Chashai. It's something that's done in private, where only he is doing it. Although we're going to say later the same thing is also true when he's sprinkling some of the blood. So that's not necessarily follow. But another point is Tosfos Yeshanim says another reason why we call it Dover Sheba Chashai is because when it comes to the sprinkling of the blood, the pasuk specifies for us what it's mechaper for. The expression is mechaper lakodesh mitumos bnei Yisrael. It's mechaper for the tumma of the Jewish people. Okay, the details, what kind of tumma, what's the exact scenario, those are in Torah Shabbat Peh, and those are in the Mishnah in Shavuos. But the basic concept that it's for tumma is right there in the pasuk. As opposed to the concept that Keturis is mechaper for Lashon Hara, you don't really have it spelled out in the pasuk. So therefore, it can be called Dabar Sheba Chashai, something that's secret. It's only part of Torah Shabbat Peh that we know that one has to do with the other. So that's that. So Keturis does accomplish kapara. Therefore, we can say that when the pasuk says that the v'chol adam lo yomoy means while he's bringing the Keturis. So that's why the Braisa said. Now, from that, you would only know when he's bringing the Keturis. How do you know the same thing applies when he's applying the blood? Then we need another word for that. We need the word bevoye lachaper when he comes to accomplish kapara, meaning any kind of kapara. Okay, so now let's analyze that part. So Tanan Hossam, we learn in a Mishnah in Kalim. The Mishnah goes through over there. There are 10 levels of Kedusha in the world. Eretz Yisrael has a higher level of Kedusha than the rest of the world. Yerushalayim has a higher level of Kedusha than Eretz Yisrael. Within Yerushalayim, the Har HaBayis, then you have the Chayil, etc., working your way up to the Kodesh HaKadosh. So the Mishnah says, one distinction, one of those zones is there's the area between the ulam and the mizbeach. So you have we don't have a floor plan over here of the Beis Hamikdash, but we know you have the Heichel, you have the main building of the Beis Hamikdash. In front of it, you have 22 amot. In front of it, you have the entryway, the ulam, which is also part of the building. The ulam is open; it is closed on three sides and open completely on the fourth side. There's a big doorway over there, 40 by 20 amot, covered with a curtain. That's the opening. That's the open side, and then the other end of it has a door into the Heichel. Then you have outside of that. There's stairs leading up to it, and then you have 22 amas away is the Mizbeach. So the area, Beina Ulam Vela Mizbeach, the area between the Ulam, between the front of the Ulam and the Mizbeach, is an area of its own, and it has certain dinim of its own. So the Mishnah, 22 amas. So an amma is about a foot and a half, according to the Rav Chaim, no, 2 feet according to the Chazon Ish. So you're talking somewhere about 40 to 45 feet, give or take, let's say. Okay. Anyway, so that area is considered a zone of its own in halacha, and it has certain dinim that don't apply to the zones before it. So one of them is the Mishnah says Pershin Mibena Ulam Vela Mizbeach B'Shasak Tara. People had to stay out of the area between the ulam and the mizbeach while Tardas is being offered. Now remember, of course, there's two different kinds of Tardas. There's the Tardas that they bring every day on the mizbeach hazav, twice a day, the morning and the afternoon, and then you have the Tardas that the Kohen Gadol brings in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Which one are we talking about? This is only talking about while they're bringing Ketores in the Heichel, then everybody has to stay not only outside of the Heichel, but outside of the area of Bein Ha'ulam V'la Mizbeach. But when the Kohen Gadol was bringing the Ketores in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, Meheichel Parshi, they do have to stay out of the entire Heichel, Mibena Ulam Vela Mizbeach like Parshi. They do not have to stay out of the area between the Ulam and the Mizbeach. So in other words, you could think of it like this. You always have to have the area where the Avodah is being done, and one zone outside of that is off limits. But people can be anywhere closer than that. So in the case when he's in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, then the Kodesh HaKadoshim and the Kodesh are off limits. And when he's in the Kodesh, then the Kodesh and Beina Ulam Ulam Mizbeach are off limits. Now we have the Ulam in between. We're going to talk about it on a number of days. The question is the Ulam considered an extension of the Heichel or not? So we'll get back to that. They have to stay out of the Heichel. Like Parshi, they do not have to at that time stay out of the area between the Ulam and the Mizbeach. So the Gemara says, Masiv Rav Adaba Abba, Ba'amri lo Kiddi. Rav Adaba Abba asked the contradiction, or some say Kiddi. Most of the Mepharshim explain that Kiddi means anonymously. It means that another version was it wasn't Rav Adaba Abba, it was some anonymous Amora, and we don't know who it is. According to that, the word Kiddi might be short for Kiddihi, like it was said as is, without knowing who it was, or the word Kiddi can also be related to a word in Aramaic that means empty, because it's like it's empty, we don't know who said it. There is one place in Gittin where Rashi says on it Shem Chacham, but there are different Gersoris in Rashi over there, so maybe even Rashi agrees it's not the name of a Chacham, but rather that it means it was said anonymously. Anyway. Sometimes it happens. They forgot who said it, or maybe just somebody called it out in the Beis Medrash and we don't know who it was. Whatever. So anyway, so he sort of Adaba Abba or anonymously asked. A brisa says, Rabbi Yosia, the kashem shapershin mina ulam v'la mizbeach b'shasak Torah, just as they stay out of the area between the ulam and the mizbeach while haktara, while burning of Torahs is going to be done, and we're going to discuss in a minute what burning of Torahs we're talking about, kach pershin b'shas matan par koin mashiach, so also they have to stay out while, from between the ulam and the mizbeach while the blood of the Kohen Mashiach is being applied. We know you have the Pasuk describes in Parshas Vayikra that if the Kohen Gadol, specifically a Kohen Gadol who was anointed with Shemen HaMishcha, so only during the time of most of the first Beis Hamikdash, if he himself is a distinguished Talmid Chacham who's capable of deciding in Halacha, and he himself makes a mistake in halacha, in certain halachas, and then follows it, then he brings a special chatas of his own, and the blood of it is brought into the heichal and sprinkled over there. This is, we say in Ezra Mekoyman, Purim and Yisrafim, Usinim and Yisrafim, that the blood of them, the Dom and Torn Azoya, Ala Parochas, Famish Bahazov, the Purim and Yisrafim include this. This is one of the Purim and Yisrafim, because afterward the body of the par is taken outside the Machne and burnt. It's not brought on the Mizbeach. So that's the power coin God. That's the power coin Mashiach. Or power helam davashot tzibur. Also the power that's brought if the tzibur makes a mistake in halacha. Similar idea. You have if the Sanhedrin makes a mistake in certain areas of halacha and most of the Jewish people follow them. Then they bring a power for a korban. And again, the blood of it is brought into the heichal and sprinkled over there. And the usiri avodis kachavim, and also the goats that are brought if they worship avodah zarah by mistake. Same idea. You have, let's say, the psak din that the Sanhedrin gave was that a certain type of avodah zarah is actually allowed. So now, when they realize their mistake, so the regular case, we have a power if, let's say, they decided that a certain kind of chaylev is allowed, or that a certain detail of Shabbos you're allowed to break, etc., etc. Avodah zarah is something unique of its own, and then they bring sirin for that as well. Anyway, so all of those, the Braise says, so all of those, Rabbi Yossi is saying that also people have to stay out of the area, Beina Ulam Lamazeach, while the blood of those is being sprinkled as well. And the Braise continues, and also, of course, the same thing applies to the blood of the Korbanos of Yom Kippur, and in fact, HaGoyis HaBach adds that in over here. He adds in the words, the Damim Shel Yom Kippurim. So, Ha Maila Yesh Beina Heichol Beina Ulam Lamazeach. So then we have to ask, says the Braise, so what is the advantage of the heichal over the ula, over the area between the ulam and the mizbeach? If we're saying that they have to stay out of both of them, then in what sense does the heichal have a higher level of kedusha than bein ulam and the mizbeach? So the difference is elisha beheichal poshin bein b'shas haktara or bein shalei b'shas haktara. From the heichal, you have to stay out both when haktara is being done as well as when haktara is not being done. Now at this point, we're assuming for purposes of the question that b'shas haktara means while Keturis is being brought in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and Shaloi B'Shas HaKtara would be while you're not doing HaKtara in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, but you're doing blood of the Par and the Sur, on Yom Kippur, in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And Umibeno Ulam V'Lam Izbeach in Persian, Ela B'Shas HaKtara, whereas Beino Ulam V'Lam Izbeach, you have to stay out only during the time of HaKtara. Now, what HaKtara? So my b'shas haktara mia parshi. The bottom line is the Braisa is telling us that while Keturis is being offered, you have to stay out of the area bein olam l'mizbeach. My la b'shas haktara d'lufnai l'fnim. On the face of it, what haktara do we mean? The one in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So then in that case, Rabbi Yossi is telling us that while the Kohen Gadol is in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, you have to stay out of not only the Kodesh HaKadoshim, not only the Kodesh, but also the bein olam l'mizbeach. And that goes against what we said before. We said Rebbe Lazar had said that only that while the Kohen Gadol is doing Keturis in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, you're allowed to be Beino Ulam Olam Mizbeach. It seems from here Rabbi Yossi is telling us that not. The answer is Loi B'Shas HaKtara DeHeichel. No, not necessarily. Going back to before I mentioned a second ago that we have also the blood of Yom Kippur, Tosfos actually keeps that out of the Gemara, not like HaGoyis HaBach. And they say, because after all, with Yom Kippur, you have some of them in the Kodesh HaKadoshim and some of them in the Kodesh, so therefore you can't really specify, the Braisa couldn't have mentioned that, because that would just confuse the issue, whereas the Purim and Yisrafim and Sirim and Yisrafim are all done only in the Heichal, only in the Kodesh. So in the end, the general rule is any korban chatos where the blood of it is brought into the heichal, then that korban you do not burn it on the mizbeach. If it's a regular chatos, then it becomes posel actually, and you burn it in an area of the Beis Mikdash that's reserved for burning posel korbanos. In these cases, the Torah tells you to do it this way, to take the blood in, but afterwards you take the body of the animal and they carry it outside the Machne, or after the Beis Mikdash was built, outside of Yerushalayim, and they burn it over there. So the Kohenim don't eat it. A Kohenim and a Serafim, nobody eats from it. A regular Chatas, yes. You see in Ezra Mekoyman, right? You have Kohenim and a Serafim, 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 Shetosim, Atzofim, Kibbol, Dom, Rechel, etc. And Elu ve'elu nisrofim beveis hadoshen, they're all burned in the beis hadoshen outside Yerushalayim. Only later on, only Mishneh Gimel, chatoris hatzibur v'yochid, only then do we start talking about what happens with them being eaten. So getting back to the Gemara, So the Braisa, so again, the Braisa had said that during Haktorah and not during Haktorah, you have to stay from out of the area of Beinu Olam Lamizbeach. We assume, for purposes of the question, that B'Shas Haktorah means while Haktorah is being brought in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and Shaloi B'Shas Haktorah means while blood is being sprinkled in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and we're saying you have to stay out of the area of Beinu Olam Lamizbeach during that time. And the answer is no. So my lab b'shas haktorah de lefnai lefnim, doesn't it mean while you're bringing ktoras lefnai lefnim, then everybody has to stay out of the area b'ena ulam v'lazara, so b'ena ulam v'lamizbeach? So there are three zones that everybody has to stay out of: the kodesh hakadoshim, the kodesh, and b'ena ulam v'lamizbeach. And the answer is like b'shas haktorah de hechel. No, what it means is while ktoras is being brought in the hechel, then you have to stay out of b'ena ulam v'lamizbeach. Two zones: the hechel and the hechel and b'ena ulam v'lamizbeach. So the question is, if you're going to understand it that way, then what do you mean? The Braisa continues, so then you have to ask what's the advantage of the Heichel versus Beinu Olam HaMizbeach. Now, obviously, there are a lot of advantages. The Heichel has an Mizbeach HaZahav, and the Menorah, and the Shulchan. Obviously, Tosfos says there are a lot of distinctions. What we mean, as far as the Din of Prisha, the Braisa is saying, what is the difference? And the answer is the difference between B'Shas HaKtara and Shaloi B'Shas HaKtara. So we're trying to figure out what B'Shas HaKtara and Shaloi B'Shas HaKtara is. Again, we thought that B'Shas HaKtara and Shaloi B'Shas HaKtara are both referring to things that are being done in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. One is Keturis, one is blood. And we're saying when Keturis is being done in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, then they have to stay away from Beinu Olam HaMizbeach. When blood is being done in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, then they're allowed back into the area of Beinu Olam HaMizbeach. So that would contradict Rebbe Lazar, because Rebbe Lazar had said even during the Ketores they were allowed to be Beinu Olam HaMizbeach. So now if we say the Gemara says Loi B'Shas HaKtara DeHechol, no, what it means is when Ketores is being brought in the Hechol, then you're not allowed to be Beinu Olam HaMizbeach. So the question is Yehochi Ha Mamayla. So what do you mean? What's the advantage of the Hechol over the Olam HaMizbeach? The Tuloi, are you telling me there's no other advantage except the difference B'Shas HaKtara and not? Ha'ika Ha'mayla. We're saying there is an important difference. The Ilum Ehecho Parashi Bein B'Shas HaKtara Didei Bein B'Shas HaKtara Dilofnai Lefnim. We'd say that the Hecho you have to stay out of in both cases when Ketores is being brought in the Kodesh, when Ketores is being brought in the Hechol twice a day, as well as when Ketores is being brought in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, you also in both cases have to stay out of the Hechol. So whenever Ketores is being brought, you're out of the Hechol. But the Beinu Olam HaMizbeach like Parashi Ela B'Shas HaKtara de Hechol. On the other hand, Beinu Olam HaMizbeach you only have to stay out of when Ketores is being brought in the Hechol. So there is a big difference. So why would the Braisa be saying, so what's the difference? And saying the only difference is B'Shas HaKtara and Shana and not B'Shas HaKtara. You have a major difference where the Ketores is being brought, according to what Rebbe Lazar is telling us. The answer is Hakatani. Yeah, but the answer is the Braisa does say Elisha Behechol Poshin Bein B'Shas HaKtara or Bein Shaloi B'Shas HaKtara. The answer is that the Braisa does say, it says that from the Hechol you have to stay out during the time when Ketores is being brought, as well as the time when Ketores is not being brought. And now we're understanding that what it means is B'Shas HaKtara means when Ketores is being brought in the Hechol, and Shaloi B'Shas HaKtara means when no Ketores is being brought in the Hechol, but rather it's being brought in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So either way, you have to stay out of the Hechol. Or Beinu Olam HaMizbeach in Persian.
Well, when the Ketores is not bringing to the Hechol, because it's bringing to the Kodesh HaKadoshim.
Right.
But it's a different time from the sprinkle of the blood. Right?
So after he's done, we're going to have in the next paragraph the sequence of events. After the Kohen Gadol goes in to the Kodesh HaKadoshim with the Ketores, then he leaves the Kodesh HaKadoshim, he comes back in a little while later with the blood of the par and sprinkles it in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, then he leaves, he comes back a little while later with the blood of the sawyer and does the same thing and sprinkles it. Altogether he goes four times into the Kodesh HaKadoshim on Yom Kippur. Once with the Ketores, once with the blood of the par and sprinkles it, once with the blood of the sawyer and sprinkles it, and later on, much later in the day, he goes in a separate change of the Big Day Lavan and takes out the Kaf and Machta from the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Yeah. So now we're understanding differently. When we said B'Shas HaKtara and Shaloi B'Shas HaKtara, what we mean is B'Shas HaKtara means while Ketores is being brought right there in the Hechol, and Shaloi B'Shas HaKtara means while Ketores is not being brought in the Hechol, but rather elsewhere in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So the Braise is telling us that in the Heichel, you have to stay out doing both things, and Rabbeinu Ulam Lamizbeach in Toshin, Ela B'Shas HaKtara. No, from the Rabbeinu Ulam Lamizbeach, you only have to stay out while HaKtara is being done, namely in the Heichel. So therefore, so yes, so the Braise is in fact telling, you're arguing that the Braise should have mentioned that distinction. It is mentioned that distinction. You misunderstood what B'Shas HaKtara and Shaloi B'Shas HaKtara is. You thought it meant Ktoras versus blood. No, it means Ktoras in the Heichel versus Ktoras in the Kodesh HaKadosh. The Heichel actually, the word Heichel has a double meaning, really. It has a broader meaning. It means the entire building, including the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and it also has a narrower meaning, meaning the Kodesh, the area 40 by 20 amos, where the Shulchan and the Menorah and the Mizbeach HaZahav are. Here we're using Heichel in that narrower sense.
So over here, when you're saying that So which
first of all, on Yom Kippur, you have that after he finishes with the sprinkle. First of all, right now we're not yet talking about sprinkling. We're going to get back to that. We're going to get back to that in a minute. But so far we were dealing with Torah. But as far as sprinkling, first of all, on Yom Kippur, after he's done with the blood of the power and the sur in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, he then goes into the Heichel and does more sprinklings over there. First he does on the Pareches, or in front of the Pareches, and then he does on the Mizbeach HaZahav. This is in Ezer Mekoyman, the dominant in Mishnah Aleph. The Daman Torah Hazoya Al Bein Habadim on the area between the poles of the Arim, which is in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Al Parochas and in front of the Parochas, the Al Mizbeach HaZahav and Al Mizbeach HaZahav. So you have all three. Then you have with the Parim and Yisrofim, with Sirim and Yisrofim, all the Hazoys take place in the Heichel. He does in front of the Parochas and he does on the Mizbeach HaZahav. So you have, there are sprinklings of blood that do take place in the Heichel, in the Kodesh as well.
And then done, then you don't have to go away.
So far what we were saying is, the Braise was telling us that we would have thought that you only need to go out of Beinu Olam Lamizbeach when Ktodos is being brought. And no, since the Pasuk says, Bevoi Lachafer B'Kodesh, then it means anything that's taking place over there involving Kapara, which includes also sprinkling of blood. But we were focusing for the moment on the Ktodos, because Rabbi Lazar had told us that there's a difference between the Ktodos in the Kodesh HaKadoshim and the Ktodos in the Heichel. The Ktodos in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, people have to keep out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim and out of the Kodesh, but they can stay Beinu Olam Lamizbeach, whereas when Ktodos is being brought in the Kodesh, in the Heichel, then they have to stay out Beinu Olam Lamizbeach, one zone further out. And we were discussing how this fits with the Braise. And the answer is it does fit with the Braise. The Braise is telling us that there's a difference between Shas HaKtara and Shaloi Shas HaKtara. We thought that meant Ktodos versus blood. Now we're saying it means Ktodos in the Heichel versus Ktodos in the Kodesh HaKadosh. Yeah.
We have two psukim, right?
We have two psukim. We have all of what we're darshaning over here is basically coming from one pasuk. Which other one?
The one from
Bamidbar. That we just mentioned briefly to explain the fact that Ktodos accomplishes Kapara in general, that we have in there in the story of Kodesh.
Yeah.
Right. No, other than that, the whole sugya is turning on this pasuk from Vayikra.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. The question still is, but still, the Braise had said, so what advantage does the Heichel have regarding Prisha over Beinu Olam Lamizbeach? And the answer was the different kinds of Akhtara, but Va'ika Ha'maila. In that case, you still have the following advantage. The Ilma Heichel Parshi Bein B'Kdusha Didei Bein B'Kdusha D'Lefnai V'Lefnim. You can look at it this way. When do you have to stay out of the Heichel? When any kind of Ktodos is being brought, whether in the Heichel itself or whether in a different area of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. The Ilum Beinu Olam Lamizbeach like Parashi Ela B'Kdusha to Heichel. Whereas Beinu Olam Lamizbeach, you only have to stay out with one kind of Ktodos, namely when it's in the Heichel. So that you could say is a certain advantage that the Heichel has in Kdusha over Beinu Olam Lamizbeach. Why isn't the Braise mentioning that distinction? And the answer is, Amar Rav Hashem Prisha Achasi. Okay, but the answer is it's all part of one Maila. In other words, what it is, you have to stay out of the Heichel. Yes, you have to stay out of the Heichel when Ktodos is being brought in the Heichel as well as when it's in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. All we're saying is that Beinu Olam Lamizbeach is different. You don't have to stay out of it because of Ketores that's being brought lefnai v'lefnim in the Kodesh HaKadosh. In other words, it's still, you still are making the same distinction. You're putting it in different words, but you're still saying the same thing. There's a concept of prisha that you have to stay out of the zone next to where something is being done. So therefore, the Heichal is next to the Kodesh HaKadosh. Therefore, you have to stay out of it. When Ketores is being brought anywhere, and Bein Olam L'Mizbeach is next to the Heichal, and therefore you have to stay out of it when Ketores is being brought in the Heichal. So it's not really a separate distinction that the Braisa should have had to mention. Once it explains to us that there's a difference between Shas Aktara and Shaloi B'Shas Aktara, which again means Ketores in the Heichal versus Ketores in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, then it doesn't have to spell it out any further.
So he's
the one who explained and clarified, and now we see that what he says is not contradicted by the Braisa. Tosfos actually learns the last question and answer a little differently. They understand that here the Gemara is dealing over here with the here the Gemara is starting to deal with the sprinkling of the blood as well, not only with the Ketores. And it's saying that after all, the fact is we do see that you have to stay out of Bein Olam L'Mizbeach, not only while Ketores is being brought in the Heichal, but also while Domim, while blood is being sprinkled in the Heichal. So why didn't the Braisa mention that? And the answer would be, once the Pasuk is talking about Ketores, primarily, yeah, it includes Matan Domim as well, but the Braisa didn't have to specify it. Once it says, Shem Prisha Achasi, once the Braisa is informing us that there's a concept of Prisha, then we know that it applies not only to Ketores, but also to Matan Domim. And the Braisa didn't have to spell it out in so many words. Well, we learned before from the Pasuk, but in other words, when the Braisa is summarizing and saying, what's the advantage of the Heichal over Bein Olam L'Mizbeach? It's enough to mention that there's a certain prisha that has to take place more in the Heichal than Bein Olam L'Mizbeach. Once we know that basic concept, then yeah, we say that it applies to Ketores and it also applies to Matan Domim. Next, Omamau, so let's go and look back at the Braisa. We said, Tach, Poshin, B'Shas, Matan, Parakoy, Mashiach, O Parahelam, Dovashot, Sibur, Sibur, Avodis, Bechavim. We said that you have to stay out of Bein Olam L'Mizbeach when blood is being sprinkled in the Heichal as well, namely the Parakoy, God, all the Parahelam, Dovashot, Sibur, and the Sibur, Avodis, Bechavim, which are all generally under the category of Porim, and Isrofim, Sibur, and Isrofim, in Mishnah Beis of Ezer, Mekhavim. So the question is Manolon, where do we know that from? The one of Yom Kippur, fine. We said because it says Bavori Lachata Bakodesh, and we said that includes Kapora of blood as well. Where do we know these other Kabanas as well? Amara Pados Astra Kapora Yom Kippurim. So the Pados says because we learn by Xeda Shava on the word Kapora from Yom Kippur, Bavori Lachata Bakodesh, by some of these, by the Seiri Avodas Kechavim also, the Pasuk says, V'chipper HaKoyin HaKadas B'nei Yisrael. So therefore, we learn Xeda Shava that the same dinim applies. Tosfos goes on to say, now what about by the Parakoyin Mashiach? It doesn't use the word Kapara. So we would have to learn it by a hekesh, but that becomes complicated because in Kodshim, we don't do lomid min alomid. Once you learn something with one of the midas, shatun, adreshes behem, you can't necessarily learn from it to the other ones. So Tosfos discusses that, in effect, you have, it's as if it said, that we douse it from certain psukim over there, that there are certain details that apply to all these karbanas, and therefore we can say that this is another one of those details as well. Fine. So to summarize so far, we're saying when Ketores is being brought in the Heichal, and also when blood is being sprinkled on the Heichal, everybody needs to be out of the Heichal and out of the area Bein Olam L'Mizbeach. When Ketores is being brought and blood is being sprinkled in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, then everybody has to stay out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim and the Heichal, but they're allowed to be Bein Olam L'Mizbeach.
When they have to go to the Azara,
they could be in the rest of the Azara, sure. They just have to stay out of that 22 Amma area between the front of the Ulam and the Mizbeach. That area has a special degree of Kedusha of its own. So now, in this connection, Amar of Adaba Abba, Shmamina Milus Daraisa. We see from this, says Rav Acha, says you can see from this that these milas, this that we're listing in those Mishnayos and Kalim, that Yisrael has more kedusha, and the Harabayis has more kedusha, and the Chela has more kedusha, 10 different levels. We have to say, says Rav Acha, that all Rav Adaba Abba, that all of those are Doraisa. Meaning, now the details of what applies in each one and what doesn't, sure, there definitely are certain details that apply Dirabanan. For example, you have a concept that a Tvul Yoim is not allowed to, we learned about it in Psochim, that a Tvul Yoim is not allowed to enter Machna Leviya, that's Dirabanan. The Gemara tells us over there they made that Zeder in the times of Yehoshaphat, about 100 years after the first Bismuth was built. But what we're saying over here is, by and large, the milas over there that I mentioned are all daraisa. They must be, Rashi says, halacha l'moshe b'sinai. So therefore, in other words, we're going to say as follows, Rashi explains, midaraisa, we're saying that when, this whole concept that we were just saying, that you have to stay out of Beina Olam v'lamizbeach, is that necessarily daraisa? So we have to discuss. Maybe it's only Dirabanan. Maybe Daraisa, you're only required to stay out of the Oihol Moyed itself, and only Dirabanan are we saying that you have to stay out of Beina Olam Lamizbeach. So let's think like this. So it must be Milas Daraisa, the Hochi Gemiri Lahu, that the Chachamim learned it, the Kabbalah, that it's Halacha L'Moshe Nisinai, that you have these details, the Isaf Radach Dirabanan, because if you were to say that this concept of Beina Olam Lamizbeach having a separate status of its own, if you were to say that it's only Dirabanan, my shnomi Beina Olam Lamizbeach, then we would say, why is it that we're keeping people out of the area of Beina Olam Lamizbeach? The reason must be Duma Mikru V'Aili, because they might accidentally enter the Heichel to the, maybe because they want to watch the Kohen, maybe because they want to watch the Kohen doing the Ketores, or whatever the reason is. So therefore, the Chachamim would keep them out of Beina Olam Lamizbeach in order that they don't accidentally walk into the Heichel. Mikulu Azona Namu Nikushu, why don't we argue in that case, that Dirabanan, we should have to say that they should have to stay out of the whole Azora, Joma Mikru V'Ailu, for the same reason, because they might enter the Heichel. So if you say that Beina Olam Lamizbeach is something, is Halacha L'Moshe Misinai, then fine. We can say that part of the Halacha L'Moshe Misinai is that you have to stay out of Beina Olam Lamizbeach. And fine. Then the Chachamim don't find it necessary to make any more of a Gzeira on that. But if you said it was Dirabanan, then we would have to ask, why are they singling out Beina Olam Lamizbeach and saying that the Gzeira applies only to that, where Midaraisa you'd be able to go all the way up to the entrance of the Heichel, and Dirabanan were keeping you out of Beina Olam Lamizbeach, then they might as well do the rest of the Azara. So therefore, so it has to be that Beina Olam Lamizbeach has a special status of its own Dirabanan. And therefore, if we were to say then that the Chachamim tell you to stay out of Beina Olam Lamizbeach, then to say also the rest of the Azara would be a Gzeira on top of a Gzeira, and the Chachamim don't do that. So necessarily, it must be the fact that Beina Olam Lamizbeach has a status of its own must be Daraisa. The Gemara says, though, still, not necessarily. No, the answer is Beina Olam Lamizbeach, Kivin Delay Maxik Midi. Since you don't have anything separating between the area of Beina Olam Lamizbeach and any further in, Loim Minkura Milsa, so it's not so obvious, and therefore people might mistakenly enter the Olam, and enter the Heichel without realizing it. Azora, Kivin de Ikum, Mizbeach HaChitzin de Mafsik, whereas the rest of the Azora, you have the Mizbeach HaChitzin, which is 32 by 32 Amos, which separates it from the rest of the Azora, Minkara Milsa, so it's very obvious, and therefore you could argue that maybe the concept of Beina Olam Lamizbeach having a special status is only Dirabanan, but the Chachamim figured, just saying Beina Olam Lamizbeach has a special status of its own, and you have to stay out of it, that's good enough, and nobody's going to confuse that with the rest of the Azora, because the Mizbeach is very obviously in between them. So that doesn't necessarily prove that the milos that are listed over there in the Mishnah and Kalim are all Daraisa. Maybe the distinction between some of the zones over there is really only Dirabanan. Okay. Amar Rava. Now Rava says, Shmamina, we can also prove from this whole discussion, Kedushas Olam V'Heichel Chodam Milsi. Because you have to say, therefore, the level of Kedusha, of the Olam, of the entryway to the Heichel, and of the Heichel itself, Chodam Milsihi, must all be considered one level of Kedusha. In other words, the Olam is also called part of Oyo Moyed, and therefore, so what we're saying is that maybe Daraisa, you only have to stay out of Oyo Moyed. Dirabanan was saying that you also have to stay during while things are being done in the Heichel, you have to stay Bein Ulam, you have to stay out of Bein Ulam Lamazeh, because you might enter the Heichel, but why don't we say, okay, the worst you're going to do is enter the Ulam, and the Ulam is separate from the Heichel. The fact that we don't say that implies that the Ulam is considered an extension of the Kedusha of the Heichel. The Isak that Shtei Kedushas Ninu, because after all, if you were to argue that there are two separate levels of Kedusha, Ulam Gufe Gzera, then after all, the Ulam itself would be a Gzera, that we'd say you're not Midarad Isi, you can't go into the Heichel, and Dirabanan, you can't go into the Ulam. Are we going to make a Gzera on top of a Gzera? We don't do that. So therefore, it has to be that the Ulam is Darad Isi, considered part of the Heichel. The Gemara says, no, still not necessarily. You could argue Ulam Uvena Ulam Lamazbeach Chodek Kedushah. You could argue that the Ulam itself and the area between the Ulam and the Mizbeach is all one degree of Kedushah. And therefore, when the Chachamim tell you to stay out of the Ulam as well as Bein Ulam Lamazbeach, it's not a Gzera on top of a Gzera, it's all one big Gzera. It's all one big Gzera. Stay out of the area that's one degree lower than the Heichel, namely the Ulam and the area Bein Ulam Lamazbeach, which are all one level. Heichel and Ulam, Shtei Kedushas, but you could still argue that the Heichel and the Ulam are considered two separate levels of Kedusha. Now again, going back to before then, when we said that somebody is standing over there and stirring the blood on the fourth row of tiles in the Heichel, so now we see, based on this discussion in the Gemara, we said it's not in the Heichel itself, because you have to stay out of the Heichel, but does it mean they can be standing in the Ulam, or does it mean they have to be standing outside in the Azara? That'll depend on what we say over here, whether the Ulam is considered the same as the Heichel, and is considered the same as the Heichel or not. If you say that it's the same as the Heichel, then conceivably he could actually be, if you say that it's not the same as the Heichel, rather, that it's the same as Bein Ulam Lamizbeach, then conceivably the guy could be standing in the Ulam with the basin of blood and stirring it, because the Kohen Gadol is going to be in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Fine, he has to stay out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim and the Kodesh, but he doesn't necessarily have to stay any further out. We might say Dirabanan, maybe he has to, but yeah. Okay. There is, by the way, Tosfos Yeshanim mentions in this connection that, after all, we don't want to keep people too far away. Now, why don't we say Dirabanan, given that nobody's allowed to be in the Heichel when the Kohen Gadol is in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, still, why don't we make Gzeira Dirabanan that they should stay out of Bein Ulam Lamazbeach? And Tosfos Yeshanim mentions one point is, after all, you want that people should be able to see to a certain degree what he's doing. They're not going to see what he's doing in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, but in particular, we learned earlier in the first parak, and we're going to learn later on in the next parak, Zerukim had the notion that you're supposed to put the Keteris on the coals outside the Kodesh HaKadoshim, so you want people to be able to stand Bein Ulam Lamazbeach, so they can peek in and make sure he's doing the right thing. So therefore, that's a reason why the Chachamim would not have imposed a Gzeira that everybody should stay out of that area as well. No, the Ein Shavus Mekdash has nothing to do with it. That has to do with Gzeira and Takonis regarding Shabbos. Oh. Yeah. No, we have many things that are bun on that apply in the Bis Mekdash. Okay. Fine. The Mishnah said, the Mishnah had mentioned a bunch of distinctions between how things are done in Yom Kippur and the rest of the year. One of them, we said, when it came to scooping coals from the Mizbeach, which they, throughout the year, they did that in order to take coals and bring them to the Mizbeach HaZahav, to bring the Keteris on twice a day. So every other day of the year, they would scoop them up using a silver shovel, and then they would pour it into a golden shovel. Whereas over here, the Kohen Gadol just uses a golden shovel to begin with. So my time, so why is that? Because HaTorah Chosam, when in Yisrael, the Torah has Rachmanis on Jewish money. We don't want to waste it unnecessarily. And if we use a golden shovel, it's more like using a shovel to scoop up coals, wears it out after a while. So you don't want to wear out a gold shovel unnecessarily. So one day a year, Yom Kippur, and it's only one day a year, and we want to do it in order to make it easier for the Kohen Gadol, because he has all the Avodah to do, and he's fasting, then we give him a break and we have him use just a gold one. But the rest of the year, we'd use a silver one, and that way we're not wasting as much money. This goes into, we talked about the other day, we said, Ein Anius B'Mokam Ashirus versus HaTorah Chosa Amamon in Shal Yisrael. There's a number of different explanations when we apply one and when the other. The Nodeb Yehuda has a tshuva about it, where he says, you have to, first of all, among other things, you have to look, is it a Kli Shares, for example? And he says, you know, silver versus gold can't really be considered Ein Anius B'Mokam Ashirus. If you're using a silver shovel instead of a gold one, you can't call that. Thank you. If using a silver shovel instead of a gold one, the Nerd of Yehuda says, look, I mean, silver is also a rich material. You can't call it that by doing that, you're doing Ein Anias Mokham Asheris, as though you're acting as though the Beis Mikdash is poor. It's fine to use a silver shovel instead of a gold one, and this way, as the Gemara says, you're saving that you're not wearing out a gold one unnecessarily. No, because you're pouring it into a gold one, right? So that's not shoveling, so it's not right. You're not scraping with it, exactly. Right. Okay. But we said today, on Yom Kippur, he scoops them up with a golden shovel of Vahayim Machnes, and that's the same one that he carries into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. My time of Shem Chol Shad Kohen Gadol, the reason is because of the Kohen Gadol's weakness, he has to do all the Avodah, he has to do all the Avodah, he's fasting, and it would be a big tircha for him to have to empty it from one shovel into another. Okay. We said, B'choyim B'shel Abaskab in Chola. We said that every other day the Kohen was gathering up coals, would use a shovel of 4 kavim, and then he'd pour it into one that holds 3 kavim. So this way you end up with a nice heaping shovel full, but some of it falls on the ground, and then, as we're going to say in a minute, what they do with it. And we said, on the other hand, on this day, on Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol again uses the same shovel, so he uses a 3 kav shovel and goes in with that itself. So, Tana, we learn in a Brice, and this is Spazrila Kav Gecholim, a calf of coals would scatter on the floor, because you're pouring 4 into 3, then you have an extra calf. So, okay, some of it goes into a heap, some of it goes into a mound, but the rest of it falls on the floor, and Machab the Ma'ama. And what they did is then they would sweep it into the Amma, into the water channel that runs through the Azara. You don't want to leave them on the floor, because the Kohenim are walking around barefoot, you don't want them to burn their feet on it, so they would sweep them into the Amma. On Shabbos, we said you can't do that, so they have one Shabbos and said they'd cover them with a big copper pot until after Shabbos. So the Gemara says, Toni Chod a Kav. Now, one Braisa says that a Kav would scatter. Ratanya Ida Kabayim. Another Braisa says 2 Kavim would scatter. So, which opinions are those according to respectively? The Shlema half the Toni Kav. I can understand the one that says Kav, Rabbanan. That would be according to the Chachamim of our Mishnah. We have the Chachamim, the Tanakama had said that every day it's 4 kavim and then into 3 kavim, so you have a kav left. And Rabbi Yossi had said that every day you use one of six of a saw, which is 6 kavim, and pour it into one of 3 kavim. So according to him, you have 3 kavim that spill on the floor. Where do you have to, who says 2? So Ela hach tani kabayim, when we say 2 kavim, mani, who would that be like? Loi Rabbanan v'loi Rabbi Yossi. Doesn't seem to be according to the Chachamim, who say 1 kav, or Rabbi Yossi, who says 3 kavim. Where are you getting 2 kavim from? The answer is Amar Chista Rabbi Shmuel Ben Osher Rabbi Yechon Ben Broika. That would be the opinion. That Braisa represents the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel Ben Osher Rabbi Yechon Ben Broika. The Tanya Rabbi Shmuel Ben Osher Rabbi Yechon Ben Broika. The Shor Kabayim Hayamachnis. He says the Kohen throughout the year would carry in a shovel that holds 2 kavim, not 3. The Tanakama and Rabbi Yossi both agreed that the shovel that he carries into the Heichol to put on the Mizbeach HaZahav holds 3 kavim. The Machlokes says, what was the original shovel that he scooped up with? 6 kavim or 4? Rabbi Yochanan and Breker is saying, no, I agree with the Tanakama that the original shovel that he scooped up with was 4 kavim, but then I say he transfers it, he pours it into one of 2 kavim. Well, 4 minus 2 is 2. So according to him, 2 kavim spill on the floor. Okay. Rav Ashi, oh yeah, 1.5, whatever, it means more than 1 and less than 2, yeah. Rav Ashi says you don't even need to answer that. Afilu Tamer Rav Yossi. This last braisa that said Kabayim could even work according to Rav Yossi of our Mishnah because of a Hachi Kama. Because after all, Rav Yossi in the Mishnah does not say 6 kavim. He says a sa. Now we know at different times in Jewish history, the measurements, the size of the measurements changed. We learned about this in Eruvin. Every other day of the year, he would scoop up the coals using a shovel that holds a saw of the midbar, which a saw of the midbar contains six kavim. Later on, when they enlarged the saw, when they created what's called saw Yerushalmis, then it was 20% larger than the one in the midbar, and therefore it comes out that the saw of the midbar holds only 5 kavim Yerushalmis. It pours it into a shovel that holds 3 kavim Yerushalmis, so 5 minus 3 equals 2. So it works out that way also. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah, B'chol Yom Hosek Kvedev Ayim Kala, every other day the shovel was heavy, today it was a lighter one. So what does that mean? On Yom Kippur, Tonim, we learn about Isaac, B'chol Yom Hosek Gilda Ove. It means the walls of it. Every other day, the walls of the shovel were thick. Today they were soft. They were thinner. Thinner. And that way, again, it's less weight for the Kohen Gadol to carry. Another one, b'choyim hosek tzara, the Mishnah had said every other day it was short, the handle was short, b'ayim arucha, and today on Yom Kippur it had a longer handle, my time, and why does it have a longer handle? Kadesh teh zroya shakarim gadol m'siyaita. This way his arm can assist him, this way he can tuck it under his arm and be able to hold it better. Tana. Now we learn another distinction that it says in Ebraisa, b'choyim lahoyolon ni'ashtik, b'ayim hoyolon ni'ashtik divre ben asgan. Ben Asgan, which Pashtus is Reb Shimon Ben Asgan, says that another distinction, the rest of the year, the pan for the coals did not have a niyashtik, and an Yom Kippur had a niyashtik. Now, what is a niyashtik? There are several different explanations. Rashi says that it means a ring that would jangle and make a noise while he's walking. The point being, Rashi says, like this. Throughout the rest of the year, the Kohen Gadol is wearing the 8 Bigdei Kohuna, one of which is the Me'il, which has bells on the bottom of it. So wherever he goes, the bells are tinkling. The Nishma Kola B'Voi Yal HaKodesh. This way, his sound is heard when he comes into the Kodesh, like so to speak. The Medrash says, you learn from that, like you don't barge into somebody's house, you knock first. So the same way over here, like so to speak, he's knocking by having the bells ring. Well, Yom Kippur is wearing only the 4 Bigdei Kohuna. There's no Me'il. So instead, you have a ring. Instead, they put a ring on this thing in order that this way it jangles and it makes a noise as he's walking, and that way also like it's kind of announcing his presence. So that's one explanation. Rabbi Hananel explains a different explanation that a niyashtik is a cover. He relates it to the word nautik. So what it means is so what would it mean? So it had a cover. So he explains that. So he just says it means a cover. There's two possibilities that the Rishonim say what kind of cover. Tosfos discusses it. One is that it means it had a sleeve for the handle. You have to think of it. He's holding this heavy pan of coals and he's carrying it all the way into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. The pan is full of coals. Eventually the handle is going to get hot. It's going to be uncomfortable. So they had a leather sleeve over it in order that he can hold it more comfortably. So that's a second explanation. A third possibility is that the niyashtik is a cover over it, a lid over the pan. And the reason would be because usually the Kohen scoops up the coals and right away carries them into the Heichal and puts them on the Mizbeach HaZahav. Here it's going to be a certain amount of time in between. He's scooping up the coals, then he's putting them down, then he's taking the handful of turis and putting into the spoon, and only then is he taking the coals in. And of course he's walking further also because Kodesh HaKadoshim is further away. There's more concern that the coals might cool off in between and therefore we need a cover over it so they keep their heat. So they have a cover, so they had a lid over the pan. According to the idea that it was a sleeve, Tosfos brings from the Yerushalmi, wouldn't it be a chatzitza then? He has to hold the actual keli, not a sleeve. And the answer is they attach the sleeve to the handle with nails, so it becomes part of the keli. So, but practically speaking, it does its job of keeping the heat away from his hand, but it's considered part of the keli, and therefore it's not a chatzitza. Well, it's slightly heavier, but you can't help it. I mean, this is by the way, negei halacha. When you have, for example, when you're toveling a keli, we know you can't have a chatzitza on it, but if you have something which is attached to the keli, they're permanently part of the keli, then it's considered part of the keli, and therefore you don't have to unscrew or whatever before you. Yeah. Some of the Rishonim point out another point, another reason why you need, if we say that the niyashtik is a lid. You think about it, the rest of the year, the Kohen is carrying a pan of coals into the Heichal, but what happens if it's too hot for him, it's getting too hot for his face, then fine, he can take his other hand and put it over his face to shield his face. Here, on Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol is carrying the pan in one hand and a spoonful of turis in the other hand. He doesn't have a free hand. Therefore, we want to put a cover over it so it's less likely to burn his face as he's walking. And then one last explanation, the Me'iri says that the niyashtik is a base. And the point is, because the rest of the year, you're not putting down the pan of coals anywhere. You take the coals into the Kodesh, you pour out the coals onto the Mizbeach HaZahav, and then the Kohen comes in and pours the Kodesh over the coals. Here, you need to put the pan down in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and then sprinkle the Kodesh over it, so it needs to have a base, so it can stand. So according to that, that's what the niyashtik is, a base that it should stand steady.
No, it wasn't me doing this, right?
So according to the Me'iri, niyashtik doesn't mean a lid. According to him, it means a base.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. The Mishnah said, "B'choyim hoya zahava yoruk." Every other day, the gold that the gold that the pan was made out of was yellow gold, and today it was red gold. So, Amar Chista, Shiva zahavim. There are 7 types of gold. Number one, zahav, regular gold. The zahav toiv, and good gold, which is refined. The zahav oifir, you have a different psukim to mention different kinds of gold. Gold of oifir, the simple meaning is oifir is the name of a place from which they brought gold, but the Gemara is understanding it's a certain quality of gold. Or zahav mufaz, another pasuk mentions zahav mufaz. The zahav shochut, the zahav sogur, the zahav parvay. So where do we see psukim that mention each of these, and what do these names mean? So zahav, the zahav toiv dichtiv, because you have in Parshas Bereishis, it was zahav ha'aretz ha'hi toiv. It describes over there the land that's surrounded by the river Pishon. You have the four rivers from Gan Eden, Pishon, Gichon, Kedekel, and Pras. So you have the river Pishon. It says over there that the gold of that land is good, implying so you have regular gold, and then you have good gold. So that itself implies that you have two different qualities. Then zahav oifir, why is to call that. So yeah, the Oskima Ophir means a type of gold that comes from the country of Ophir. Where Ophir is, the Pasuk mentions that Shlomo meant that Shlomo sent sailors with ships to Ophir and they brought back gold and various treasures. There's a lot of different possibilities where Ophir is. Maybe it's someplace in Africa, maybe it's someplace in India. There's even people who claim that it's maybe in America. Whatever. Anyway. Zahav Mufaz, what's the fourth kind is called Zahav Mufaz, means Shadoma Lepaz. It's as brilliant as Paz, which is a pearl. So it's a brilliant, lustrous kind of gold. Zahav Shochot, the fifth kind is called Zahav Shochot, is Shenitva Kechot. It can be spun like threads. It's very soft gold, so it can be drawn out into wires and used, and then it can be drawn out into wires and used to sew with, like you would use wires or you'd use thread to sew with. Next, Zahav Sogur is called that. The Shosh and Niftach, when a store selling that kind of gold opens, Kolachanurias Nisgaris, all other stores that sell gold are going to close because nobody's going to be interested in buying any other gold when there's Zahav Sogur available. So there's like, Zahav Parvayim in the seventh one. It's called Zahav Parvayim. Shadoma Ladam HaParim. It resembles the blood of bulls. It's red. And that's the kind.
Different
colors. The Pashtus, we mean that these are different alloys of gold. The Pashtus, we mean, so Marshall explains, he draws a connection between these seven types of gold and the seven major heavenly bodies, the sun, the moon, and the five planets that we can clearly see from Earth. And he says, so like each one has a certain influence in the world. We know from various Gemaras that each of them has a certain influence in the world. Well, do we still have these kinds of gold? I don't know. We have many different kinds of alloys of gold. I guess some of them are some of the ones that I mentioned over here. Anyway, Samar Shah explains that each of these seven heavenly bodies, through its influence, there comes to be a certain kind of gold in the world. And then you have Zahav Toiv, which is the purest gold. That one is associated with the sun. And he says that's why it's called Zahav Toiv, like it says, by Yara Lekim Asa Urki Toiv. Yeah. So anyway, it says Zahav Parvayim is, I guess, some kind of alloy of gold that's reddish. It says Zahav Aretzaito. That's what he said by the river Pishon, right?
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Rav Ashi says, no, there aren't seven kinds of gold. Chamishahein. There are only five kinds. V'chochad v'chad ispe Zahav v'zahav toiv. Each one has regular gold and better gold. So in other words, according to Rav Ashi, there's five main types. Zahav and Zahav Toiv, according to him, are not separate types. They're grades of gold within each of these five types. So you have within Zahav Oifer, for example, you have regular Zahav Oifer and you have Zahav Toiv from Oifer. Within Zahav Mufaz, you have regular Zahav Mufaz and Zahav Toiv Mufaz, etc. Taninami Hachi, be that as it may, we learn similarly in a Braisa that there is something called Zahav Pravayim, which is red. Every other day, the pan was made from yellow gold. Today, it was made out of red gold. Behind was Zahav Parvayim. That is the Zahav Parvayim, Shadoma Ladam HaParim. And it's called that because it looks like the blood of bulls. So therefore, so they used it on Yom Kippur. One idea is, it's like color coordinated with the, he's going to be bringing the blood of the bull into the Kodesh HaKadoshim later on to sprinkle. So we have the pan is, so to speak, color coordinated with it, and therefore it's also made out of this type of gold. And also the idea is, it's very expensive, it's the best kind of gold, and therefore we want to use it in honor of Yom Kippur.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the Zahav Parvayim. Okay. Okay. Everyone.